We explore if Rob is indeed cloned from Karl Marx. We discover that Ken is in fact Hitler reincarnated. And we cremate Jerry's remains to ensure that he is neither cloned nor reincarnated on Episode 7 of the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Now, welcome to the Midwest Peace Process. This is Rob.
This is Jerry.
Oh, good job. Talk nice. Over each other.
We even practiced this.
Yeah, we did. That's right. Didn't determine an order, though. We'll do better next time.
Welcome to episode 7. We've made it to 7 episodes.
7 episodes.
We are clogging your hard drive with 7 episodes of podcasts.
That's right. Filling up your iPod with nonsense.
It's right. What do we got for a topic this week, Jerry?
Our main event will be the world's smallest political quiz.
Ah.
And the three of us took this quiz, and I think the results are somewhat surprising. So we're going to talk about that and encourage our listeners to take the quiz as well and find out exactly where they fall on the grid.
I'm sure that link will be in the show notes.
It is.
I just wanted to say show notes. I enjoyed that.
So we got a lot of ground to cover tonight. Let's jump right into the listener feedback, shall we?
We shall.
Okay. We got a response to our discussion in episode 5, believe it or not, about transaction costs. One of our listeners sent in a link to an essay about the effect of mandated safety features on cars and how major automakers like the government to require new features and expensive safety measures because it boosts their profits and drives out the competition. So I thought that was interesting. I wanted to mention that.
I think another thing that goes with that is the car makers also enjoy when the federal government mandates nationwide standards. They have a hard time when California goes out there with their big market and puts some emission standards that are different than everybody else, and then they have to work that standard either throughout their fleet or create some kind of special car, which is super expensive. So their car makers are big fans of the overarching federal nemesis.
Sure.
Is that an unhealthy symbiosis?
That's right.
The overarching, federal nemesis?
I said it.
I like it.
They're going to take your liberal card away. Of course, we may take that away later when we talk about the quiz. So.
Ooh,
true.
Teaser.
A listener said, "Don't remember the exact numbers, but when my father was a young man, he would go to a doctor once a year and pay $10 for his yearly physical. One year, he went, and his doctor charged him $20. Explanation was that Medicare allows the doctor to charge $20, so the doctor charges Medicare patients $20. And since the law disallows charging non-Medicare patients less than Medicare patients, everybody has to pay the same amount."
Wow.
So this was related to our when we got into healthcare. I don't know if that was episode 4. That was a couple episodes ago, but
weeks ago.
Yeah.
Or minutes ago, depending on if they're listening to them all together.
But I thought that was an interesting point too, that it's because the law requires that everybody get charged the same, we're all getting, charged what the Medicare patients are being charged.
In a moderately related story that goes a couple of years back, there was a gas station, I think it was local here, where basically the guy made most of his money off, like a Quick Trip. You're making very low margins on gasoline, so he's making his money on, Slurpees and Big Gulps and all that. So he wanted to undercut the competition on the gas prices, so he cut his gas price by like 5 cents. The government came in and said, yeah, you can't do that. You have to charge a certain amount as a minimum for gas. So he got basically told you can't do that. So he was going to sell gas at a loss for him just to get people into his joint so he could sell Slurpees, and he couldn't do that. So it's kind of an amusing, you know, it's one of those stories that kind of makes you scratch your head. If I want to buy 100,000 gallons of gas and give it away, I don't know why somebody would stop me, but they do. So
yeah.
I don't know to what end. I have no idea.
You're trying to beat the system.
Yeah, I guess by giving something away. How dare I? Crazy.
Gas is artificially cheap anyway. It's too cheap.
Well, there might be some truth to that.
I think you're right.
Oh, agreement.
But so you have to pass another silly law to cover up your silly subsidy that you do?
Silly laws.
Jerry, this would be a good time for you to explain one of your favorite stories.
I'm excited to hear what this is.
What's my favorite story?
Well, it's not your favorite, but it's one that you always go back to when we talk about passing silly laws to cover up silly laws.
Oh, yeah. It's an old story called the Peterkin Papers.
This is like page 2 in the Jerry Pipes diatribe.
In my playbook.
That's right.
There's a it's a book, the Peterkin Papers. I don't know if you've ever heard of it. The Peterkins are this family of morons, essentially, and the book just kind of details their escapades throughout life and some of the crazy, stupid things they do. But one in particular starts with the mother of the family waking up one morning and she accidentally puts salt in her coffee instead of sugar. And this sets the entire family off on this day-long odyssey as they try to remedy this mistake. And so they go to a chemist, they go to the local pharmacist, they go to a witch doctor. I mean, they go to all these people who are adding all of these things to the coffee that are supposed to, you know, neutralize the taste of the salt and, you know, enhance the natural coffee flavor. And it's just, you know, one thing after another. And at the end of the day, the coffee is still undrinkable. And of course, the reader realizes that the solution is you pour the coffee out and start over. But that never occurs to the Peterkins. I like to use this story to kind of illustrate some of the Band-Aid solutions that the government tries to implement, because they'll just put Band-Aid after Band-Aid on a problem instead of just throwing it out and starting over.
You guys hear our phone ringing? Can you hear that?
No.
Good. No. Never mind. My phone's not ringing. A little bit of live Peterkins podcasting there. I read another story today that, I don't know, sort of related, I guess, but there's, Rob, this one will raise your ire, and Jerry will love it, but there's a conservative group at a college, did you see, that was running a diversity bake sale?
I saw that.
No.
Basically, they're running a bake sale, and the prices are based on your ethnic background, you know, like for white people, a cupcake is $2. And then, you know, if you're Hispanic, it's $1.50. And if you're American Indian, it's only a quarter. And if you're a woman, it goes down by another price. And so they're trying to make a point, you know. But, of course, there's a bunch of people that are up in arms about it. And this is terrible. And how can you do this? But I think the amusing thing about it is the people that are complaining about it are missing the point completely of what they're trying to show, because it's something that we do every day and we just accept it and it's okay. But then when you kind of strip all the fringe away from it and just expose it for what it is, then people are offended by it. So I don't know. I just thought it was an amusing story. It's obviously over the top and silly, but at the same time, the reaction to it is quite silly as well.
My ire is not raised.
No?
It like lifted, it levitated a little bit. It kind of went up for a second.
See, I thought you would look at that and just roll your eyes at the silly conservatives that, you know,
I would have to exploit
something, you know, and blow it up to an illogical conclusion to prove a point that
isn't
the point.
You got it.
But it is the point. That's my whole point. So.
Well, and what battle are they really fighting? And why
they're not fighting any battle. They're just pointing out that we're doing what our government and our country does every day. But somehow when we do it in a bake sale, it's exploitation and ridiculous, and when you do it on a macro scale, it's, well, that's okay. That's just what we do. So it's an allegory. Go with it.
It's an allegory.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, me too.
A listener pointed out that the practice of a company branding itself as eco-friendly is now called eco-labeling. So if it's, I guess, true, or whether it's true or not, it's called eco-labeling. So, yeah, now we're up to feedback from last week's episode on global warming, of course.
Oh, boy. Lots of feedback.
Yes, we got quite a bit. The same listener also asked Ken for an example of, quote, something government does better than private industry in an equal way as presented in Jerry's Elephant Preserve example. So they're not,
go on, Ken.
They're not going to let you off the hook on comments.
See, I don't think I have an example of something that government and industry both do that government does better, but I think there are things that government does that private industry is not allowed to do that wouldn't work if private industry was in charge of it.
Right. Or things that need to be done that don't necessarily carry a profit motive, right, that would make it viable.
Exactly. And we've talked about many of them. We talked about utilities. We talked about roads. I don't think the all land is privately owned, every road's a toll road thing would work. I think it would take me 7 hours to get to work every day, and it would be ridiculously silly. But
oh, I don't think so.
Okay, an hour.
It takes you an hour to get to work now.
Nah, it's about half an hour. But I don't think that would work. I mean, I why don't we take a spot? Let's get a parcel of land and let's give that a shot. But I think that would be an unmitigated disaster.
Well, keep in mind that if you were a toll road owner, all right, owning a toll road is a volume business. So you
like the bank of change.
Exactly. How do you make your money? Volume.
You've got to find a clip of that and put it in.
But
does Rob know that story?
I do not.
There's a Saturday Night Live fake commercial about the bank of change.
I'm with it. Yeah,
you bring us a dollar, we give you 20 nickels. You want 100 pennies? We can do that. You ask how we make money? The answer's simple. Volume. So you're saying they got to pump people through this road. So
I'm saying
stopping everybody every 10 feet to collect a dollar is not going to get it done. They're going to avoid your road.
Exactly.
But then is the whole country going to end up paved? I mean, wow.
No.
Just most of it?
I wouldn't expect a significant increase in the number of roads or the miles of roads. I think all of the public roads that are out there now would just become privately owned.
Yeah.
And there would be tolls. But actually, the tolls would only apply to probably interstates and other state highways. If you're on a, you know, on a surface road, the ownership of that road would probably be split among, if it's in a business district, all of the businesses that use that road to access their buildings, they would pay. If it's a residential neighborhood, then the residents would.
And they might appoint, say, like a committee that they would give money to that would then maintain that road.
Possibly.
It would be like.
There would be like more dots, like a more low dot.
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. Right.
Right. Exactly. Right. But think of it this way. Your property currently ends at, you know, the sidewalk or at the curb or whatever. Right. Your property would extend then to the middle of the road, and you would own, you know, that section of street. You'd be responsible for maintaining it.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing it.
Not seeing it. And I think this is a good example, if we want to pick the toll roads, is I think their actual business case that would come out. Like, ideally, the business case for the toll road owner would say, I want to make the best toll road that people want to drive on my road, and they're going to pay me the money that I want to charge them because my road's so great and I want to draw more traffic, whatever it is. I don't think that's how it would work. I think you would monopolize. You would try to collude or do whatever you could to get enough power and basically own the thoroughfare, and then you would charge as much as you wanted to get
money from people that have to go
more land around it. So yours is the shortest route.
Right. So that's not a free market transaction of providing a service for the best value. That's
but you can only raise it so high, and then people are going to find a different route. They're going to go around your road
if they can. It sounds like a very complicated thing. But I may just be so ensconced in the matrix that I can't I can't see the ones and zeros.
Well,
so.
Indoctrinated.
When you find out there's traffic on your way home, sometimes you take an alternate route home, right?
I just go to a bar and drink myself silly, wait for traffic to clear.
I just yell at the person in front of me, why don't you go? Too.
Right.
I think the same logic would apply.
I think you
would avoid the roads that were a hassle.
Yeah, I guess. I need to see this in action.
I like your vision.
It's a vision. It's like a peyote-induced vision, but it's a vision. So.
Yeah, it's like a fantasy vision, and like kind of almost like unicorns and rainbows. And
yeah.
But I like to think of it.
My fantasies consist of considerably different things than privately owned toll roads, but.
Mine consists of unicorns and rainbows.
Right.
Yes. We're going with that.
Okay.
All right.
So I can't pull out like a Kenyan elephant preserve that the government runs better than a private industry. I just think there are some things that the government does that if it was left to private industry either wouldn't get done. And I'm not saying the government does them well. I am in no way, shape, or form claiming the way we do roads is fantastically awesome. Not claiming that at all. But I'm claiming it's no worse, I don't think, than it would be under a private model.
Well, the only thing that's worse about it is you're paying for roads you never use.
Yeah, true.
That's what's worse about it.
Right. That's the same with schools, right? I mean,
no car left behind.
If you want to look at it on the federal level, you're paying for roads and bridges and all kinds of crazy stuff around the country that you'll never use.
Right. Right.
So
as long as we're all doing it, it's okay. We mean well.
As long as we're equally oppressed.
Right.
Gotcha. Exactly. Another listener on Trusting Reviewers. Ken, you had made a comment last week about how you didn't think we could trust reviews, online reviews of various services.
Yeah,
this listener said, there are at least a couple mechanisms to do that right now, and probably others that might work too. Amazon has a top reviewer or something like that. Idea is that if someone has written a lot of reviews, then they are less likely to be the author / manufacturer of the thing being reviewed. Also, they might know how to write decent reviews because of their experience. Other sites like Dig, Reddit, have a rating for specific comments to a thread. Other sites may have paid reviewers. So I think they're just pointing out there's a lot of ways to mitigate what you were talking about.
And even now, I mean, I use Amazon reviews, and when I go to Best Buy and look at a laptop, I look at the reviews. And yeah, you can dismiss people when you read it and it's all lowercase and they use text speak and improper English, I'm
right.
Probably thinking this person isn't really worth my time to read it. So, but it's not foolproof, right? I mean, you can pay people to write reviews that are very good writers, and that's kind of like advertising, right? So, I mean, I think you end up coming down to the same model maybe that we have now, just in a different medium.
Yeah.
I'm going to pay you because you're a good writer and I'm not, but I've got this crappy product. But hey, you can write, so go write a good review about my product. I don't know that would be rampant, but it would exist, and you would have to filter it somehow.
And it's another example where I don't think it's not a business enterprise's job to necessarily provide the best service. It's their job to provide the impression of the best service.
Right.
So whether that's advertising or paying reviewers or whatever it is, I think there's a lot more money that goes into conveying an appearance that doesn't actually translate to the consumer than there is of actual, free market transactions.
The market should do is it should reward good products with longevity. You might have a good year. It's like a movie, right? You advertise the heck out of your movie and you have a good opening week and everybody realizes your movie sucks. So your movie drops 98%. Somebody made theirs in that week, but if you want to be, Jaws or Titanic, you're going to need to be a good movie.
That is a good example. That is a good example because those movies, I mean, they pump the advertising. I mean, you could think of some bombs, you know, what Jiggly or whatever it was.
Ishtar.
Ishtar, you know, you can put you can go look at how much advertising money went into that. You know,
are you sure it was pronounced Jiggly, or is that a different movie you're thinking of?
I'm thinking of the Jennifer Lopez.
Oh, okay. Affleck. All right.
Yeah, that was Jiggly.
Jiggly. Yeah, I think
you were naming a different movie.
Yeah, Jiggly is a different movie.
I didn't know you were into that. All right, next topic.
No, unicorns and rainbows. I told you already.
A couple of listeners, surprisingly, said that recycling, for the most part, is not a good thing because it is mandatory in most areas now, and it costs more than it saves.
Yeah,
it is also questionable whether the material is actually being recycled or just being dumped into the landfill with everything else.
And that is certainly when I was in my beginning phases of being anti-recycling because I'm a right-wing, you know, jerk. That was an argument against recycling. I don't think it is super efficient, but I think it's gotten more so than it was. But it's not perfect. But I don't know that you just quit doing something because it's not perfect. So I would need to see stats on, you know, what percentage of things that you throw in the recycler really get recycled. What's the cost to benefit ratio? You know, sometimes I think recycling is like a feel good thing, and that you put your thing in the recycler and you cart it out to the curb, but you have no idea what happens after that. I mean, that dude could like go around the corner and just dump it in a landfill and be laughing his keister off. I don't know.
Well,
you know, it's like a lot of things we do. It's a feel good deal. It's like, I don't know what happens after, but I feel good. So
we had security theater. Is this refuse theater?
Yeah, this is environmental theater.
But I've seen some of what they're talking about where people kind of do these exposés on recycling and show that these things that show up as recycled are only 5% or 10% or 20% recycled materials, and they go through it again, and they actually pitch a lot of it in landfill, and very little of what you think is recyclable gets recycled. But I don't know what the stats are on that.
I'll include a link in the show notes to there was an article a couple of years ago in St. Louis Magazine about this topic, and it was called The Amazing Waste. And
nice.
They... Yeah, I thought it was a clever title. Anyway, they go to – I think there's only one operating landfill in St. Louis anymore. It's in Maryland Heights. And I don't know if this is true for landfills across the country, but at least this one in St. Louis, there is a recycling facility there that is genuinely, you know, taking the material and bailing it up and shipping it off and selling it. You know, making some money off of it, because they interview the guy who runs the place, and, you know, he's talking about exactly, I mean, he's talking about the numbers that you're asking about, Ken.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be interesting. And the person, I think, brought up the example as well of the one good recycling thing they would point out is aluminum cans, right? There's a specific facility. You know that it's recyclable. You collect it. You bundle it. You bring it to them. You get paid some money. Off you go. And I think a lot of times we don't know what is and isn't recyclable. You know, you look at the bottom and you see the little triangle and it's got a 7 in it. And you have no idea what that means, but sure, we'll throw
as
the
long
7
as it's
in
not
there.
6. I've always forget what there's some number that's like, oh my god, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. No, not 6. Okay, 7.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. It's 6. It's
I hate
styrene.
Oh, look at
you. So why don't they just not put a number on that or something? I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense. But anyway.
Sure. Sure, it means something.
It's silliness. So, you know, you just throw everything in there. Have you ever, like, take a label off something and you're like, it's paper, but it's kind of shiny paper, and I don't know if this is recyclable. Yeah, it's recyclable, and you throw it in there. So,
yeah.
Because it might be recyclable. So why don't we just throw everything in the trash, and if they're going to go through your recycle material, why don't they just go through your trash and pick out what's recyclable and what's not, right?
Yeah. Well, I'm obviously opposed to being forced to pay for recycling. Now, I was paying for it before I was forced to do it.
Because you wanted to.
So, yeah.
Right.
Because I thought it was the right thing to do. But,
but the
you
act
know,
of forcing you to do it.
Yeah. So now I resent it, you know.
Right. That's fair. Don't laugh, Ken.
Oh, it's just beautiful. It's very Jerry. I did this when it was cool, but now that it's mandatory, I'm going to protest.
It's not the cool.
I'm going to throw pig's blood on somebody and light myself on fire in front of City Hall.
Yeah, I probably won't resort to self-immolation over recycling.
Yeah, that's right. I like it. Yeah, I would be very interested in seeing that article because I don't know. I mean, I think it's a good thing to do. I know it's not perfect, but we get into this mode where it's, and you see this all the time, where you can just point one example where something is slightly flawed and you just say, oh, see, we shouldn't even bother.
Right. This is and
completely kind of unreasonable because there's this one example I can find where it's not perfect.
Well, right. Right. And the theme of the last podcast is that if you just hate the idea of recycling or you think it's Al Gore's crazy idea, then you're going to, Google up some stats that say it's not worth it. So you don't have to go walk those extra steps to put the can in the doodad. I don't know what it's called. Recycling bin. There we go. Figured it out.
That was complicated.
I went with doodad.
Very nice.
But I still think I think the same person had also mentioned about how guilt was not a motivator for them to recycle, that they were motivated by it being the right thing to do. All right, well, that's good, but I think guilt plays into that a little bit somewhere, right? Maybe I'm wrong. It's the right thing to do because not doing it would be wrong. So
yeah,
that's got to be some kind of a motivator that, hey, I don't want to do the wrong thing. I want to do the right thing, so I'm going to recycle. Whether it's cost effective or not, I don't know.
One of our listeners called Rob out on his comment.
That was me.
The guy. Ken sending anonymous comments right now. The government's not telling you can't drive that F-4 at 850, but there should be something else that tells you not to drive it. That was your comment, Rob. And the listener said, well, actually, there is something telling you not to drive it. It's called the price of fuel.
Yeah. Let me go ahead and respond to that. And I think that's what it comes down to is that price of fuel – maybe we need to have a whole show about this, but that price of fuel is artificially created, and it's artificially created by those who want us to buy fuel. That if we really were in a free market world, I think there would be other alternative solutions out there that could combat that urge to buy the F-850. But I think the car companies and especially the American car companies and truck companies, as they've turned out to be, are putting forth an effort to make sure that gas is cheap so you still buy that thing. And so if there's another product out there, electric car, whatever it is, that they're going to drag their feet on that and keep pushing that fuel price down. Basically, what can we say? They're selling their fuel at a loss so that they get that service, kind of like the Quick Trip guy.
Yeah.
But you say they're artificially keeping it down, but I'm not sure that makes sense. What does that mean? How are they artificially keeping it down? They're either making money or they're not, and I think they're making a whole buttload of money, aren't they?
Who?
The gas companies.
Right.
So how are they artificially keeping it down? I don't get that.
I think they lobby Congress to pass the laws necessary
But that's not the company's fault. That's government's fault. So I would say government is artificially lowering that price, not the company. Now, the company is coercing, as I said before, the company into doing it, but that's not the company's fault.
Well, I think Rob's point stands, though. In a truly free market,
yeah,
gas would be 3-4 times what it costs in this country right now.
Yeah, probably so. Like it is in Europe, right?
Cross
the border to Canada and fill
petrol up your tank. In Europe is like $5 a liter or something.
Right.
Which is a little more than a quart, right?
And it's not because it takes it's really hard to get it up past those mountains up there.
So can you blame, okay, I'm company A and you're government, and I come to you and say, hey, government, why don't you give me like $10 million, and you give it to me. Is that my fault or is that your fault?
Well,
I want my prices to be lower so I can make a buttload of cash, so I want you to subsidize me, and you say yes. Who's at fault there, me or you?
Do you blame the crack addict on the crack dealer, or is it the crack addict's fault? Look, he's out there just selling his goods. I know what you're saying. I mean,
I can't blame a company for using whatever means someone puts at their disposal to make a whole bunch of cash because that's what they're trying to do.
I guess I'm really, really objecting to is the idea that the price for that F-850 that the guy wants to drive and waste his money on the $2 a gallon price for gas is an artificial price, and so using that if the demand dropped for those types of vehicles or demand dropped for that gas, suddenly the price would go down. Well, is that because Is that because it's harder to or it's, you know, the idea of getting that gas out of the ground and turning it into gasoline? I don't know how gas works. That's pretty obvious. But is that process really changing that's making those prices, or are there other factors at work?
Well, I think we can agree that it's not a free market. Whatever levers are pulled to manipulate it, it's not allowed to work the way that person says it would work.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah,
we can agree with that. Succinct.
Okay. All right. Let's see. What are we moving on to here?
Oh. Is that all the feedback?
No.
Oh my goodness.
No, I'm
this is the feedback show.
Yeah. I'm like halfway through it.
This is like the flashback show that they do when they're out of ideas on a sitcom.
Right.
Where they just string together the clips from old
shows. It's a clip show.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Listener said this. I understand what Jerry is saying about Consumer Reports, etc., but I disagree that the government being involved in regulation is what's holding back people from doing more things like that. Determining that Company X is dumping nasty chemicals into a canal is just plain hard and takes effort. Just seeing stuff go into the water isn't enough. It has to be tested, components and concentrations determined, etc. I don't think many people have the resources to do that. Rating the electrician who did work on your house is a lot easier. However, even then, I doubt many people could tell if work was done according to code. And yes, I think asking for free market comments to drive business is asking for corruption. Okay, well, so here's my response to that. First of all, there are a number of fundamental things in our marketplace that need to change before we could rely on this level of self-regulation. Those things cannot and will not change on their own as long as government regulators continue to provide the crutch that the public leans on for regulation. Now, since he used the example of an electrician, I want to point out that the National Electrical Code is not law. It's an industry standard published by a private organization called the National Fire Protection Association. Now, I don't think that's common knowledge, but if it was, a homeowner would at least know to only hire electricians that have been certified by the NFPA, rating their mastery of the code. Now, currently, the homeowner doesn't ask this question because they assume somebody in the government is regulating the industry. And the electrician doesn't elaborate on it because he assumes that the homeowner doesn't care. And he knows that if anybody's going to call him out on it, it's going to be the government. So we have this don't ask, don't tell kind of policy when it comes to safety, right? That needs to change. Now, imagine, if you will, an electrician that comes to your home. He does an estimate, and then he shows you a snazzy multimedia presentation on his iPad that graphically illustrates the applicable portion of the code for the job at hand and exactly how he's going to perform the work. Now, when the homeowner signs off on that approach, then he goes ahead and does the work, and then he invites the homeowner to inspect the work. And only when the work is signed off does the electrician get paid. Now, if the industry worked this way, I dare say there would never again be another electrical problem in any home in America.
Wow.
That's
wow,
a bit much. This is like a ride at Disney, like in Spaceship Earth. It would happen at the end when they turn your car around and they show you this future world.
Yeah.
The electrician has an iPad and
exactly.
His butt crack isn't sticking out and he's really eloquent and knows how to give a PowerPoint presentation.
But here's my point. The consumer needs to be as concerned with the safety aspect of the transaction as they are currently are with the price to drive the industry to respond to that requirement. And when this fundamental shift has occurred, then I think the industry will truly be self-regulating.
I will quibble with your never be another electrical problem ever.
Well, okay, maybe I oversold that. But
a little bit.
I was right with you to the very last sentence. I'm like, whoa.
But you see what I'm saying? I mean, if that were like the full service electrician, right?
Right.
If that is what people had come to expect from an electrician, then it would address a lot of those issues. But instead, everybody just kind of stands back and says, oh, yeah, somebody
somebody in a local, you know, city hall is going to come inspect it anyway. I don't really care what this guy's doing.
Yeah. And isn't it also a flaw of just the capitalist environment that you look for this lowest price? Like, yeah. All right, I'll pay $40 for this guy to come in with his iPad, but like Johnny down the street's going to do it for $20.
Right. Well, you get what you pay for.
Right. Right.
You know, the guy who charges you $20 is going to burn your house down.
I do like that. I mean, yeah, if my electrician would hook me up with an iPad presentation, I was pinging him with questions. I'm like, so exactly what wire did you use here? He's like, you know, he didn't want to answer anything because he's like, why is this guy pestering me?
Right.
About these issues. Yeah, I would have loved a little situation like that.
Multimedia presentation.
Projected on my wall.
Some music, animation.
But you do. It's a compelling point. I mean, if you're talking about, like, how do people find electricians? You know, do they look in the yellow pages? Ooh, AAA Electric. They look
right. Yeah. What like, works now, right? Word of mouth.
It's like AAA.
You ask somebody at work. Hey, you had your basement finished. Who did you use? I mean,
exactly. It's word of mouth, and so that's a compelling argument you put forth because when I use the person that I used in my old house because they did a good job before.
Right.
And so that's kind of how I did it. But yeah, I certainly didn't go Google electrician and, you know, tried to figure out who that was. That is good. It's a good example.
Okay. Mount Pinatubo.
Oh my goodness. We're still going.
a listener said, I won't crucify Jerry, but a little research shows you to be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
And I quote, one point is that also worth making is that although volcanoes release some CO2 into the atmosphere, this is completely negligible compared to anthropogenic emissions. And in parentheses, about 0.15 gigatons per year of carbon compared to about 7 gigatons per year of human-related sources. So this seems to invalidate Jerry's and Ken's position that man-made contributions pale in comparison to natural ones.
Let me ask this.
Invalidated. Right. Done. Invalidated.
Well, I
have
said,
a question, though. How much of that 7 gigawatts or whatever we're talking about here is people just breathing versus cars versus whatever? I mean, because if we're going to contend that just us being here and breathing, we're... Well, I mean, I'm not going to quit that. So, I'm not being flippant, I guess, but I don't know what that 7
well,
gigatons
that's,
per
that's
year
is. That's a valid, valid question, too, because, I mean, my response is the statistic on that webpage that he provided us, and I've got a link to it in the show notes. It provided no citations at all to back it up.
Yeah,
so,
but you don't need citations when it proves your point. Only the other guy needs citations.
Well, other argue. Than the... Other than
be
the
nice
reputation.
To the listeners.
Oh, sorry. I have to see him tomorrow at work, so he'll yell at me. I already got an earful this week, so I'm sure I'll get more.
Other than the reputation of realclimate.org itself, and I'm in no way trying to discount its reputation, but I'm just saying that factoid is as valid as the one that I cited from memory.
Yeah.
So
I would like to see the breakdown of the 7 gigatons of human output, because I mean if you're going to crucify us for just breathing, I can't do anything about it.
And you know, I would like to see a scientific paper on exactly how CO2 emissions are measured,
yeah,
you know, from a volcano. I mean, how do you freaking do that?
I don't know.
Do you just put a big plastic bag over the top and, you know, capture all that CO2? And I mean, I think obviously there's some method for estimating it. They can't
literally
can't just measure it.
Right. They're not going to go count molecules.
I've never read a paper on how that's done. And
I think it bears more looking into. I don't know. I mean, everything affects the environment, right? Lions eat antelopes, and you know, antelopes eat grass, and everything affects everything. So we're part of that. We've just won. We're better than everybody else. We are at the top of the food chain, and we do bad stuff, and that stuff affects the environment. But I don't know what the breakout is of how much of that is cars versus breathing versus, you know, things rotting in a landfill versus whatever. I don't know the answer to that.
another basic question. Do you guys believe there is a general trend toward the Earth warming in the recent past that is continuing into the near future?
I tend to think yes, but I don't know what I don't have any data. I mean, I could get some articles. But
so it's just so like if I don't have feeling. Data,
the burden of proof is on me. But
that's right. That's right. Only I cannot have data.
I'm a denier. I'm like a Holocaust denier. Or the moon is made of green cheese. Or I'm like a segregationist because I'm a denier.
And the reason I don't have data is I'm just so upset with data. I don't like with this argument in particular, you know, it's
we're better off
than,
just going on a hunch.
Right. And just how it feels. How does this feel?
Wow.
If I was going to bet in poker, I'd say yes.
Well, I think if it were possible to look at a graph of average temperatures on Earth with no human inhabitants, and this kind of gets to what Ken said in the last episode, that it's not a controlled experiment. You don't have this Earth over here with no people on it. But if you could, I think the graph would rise and fall in some sort of natural cycle. Right. And, you know, that may not be true, but that's what I believe. That's my hunch.
That's true. I think
because the Earth did it before we were here, right?
But I think you're misstating what the climate change argument is. Not that I'm signing up
to
it.
So the key is,
but the argument is that it isn't that there isn't fluctuations in climate. Right. I knew it goes up and down. It's that as we look through time, if you can actually believe these models, that there is up and downs and there are changes, but what we're seeing here is an anomalous type of change, that Earth warms, Earth cools, poles switch, that all that stuff happens. We know it can vary based on volcanoes and all that stuff. And so we see what this varying data set is, and now we're seeing it jump off the graph. That's what the argument is. It's not so like, ooh, we have 5 years of data that shows it's going up, and you know, case closed.
If you superimpose temperature on human inhabited Earth over that of non-human inhabited Earth, is there a variation? And that's what they're trying to prove, right? And they can do that by going into the past and saying, this is what happened before. This is what we think is happening now and what should be happening. But here's what is happening, and we think those are different. Therefore, QED, man is doing this.
I think it's looking at what the natural changes are in the way man inhabited the Earth between whenever man showed up 6,000 years ago.
Exactly.
You got it. And, you know, and 1900, and we could figure out exactly what that Earth was doing. And then we could look between 1900 and 2000 and see, well, boy, that's a lot different. Well, what changed in 1900 to 2000? Is it just, you know, the happenstance, or what else happened in the climate that was different between 1950 and 1050?
Yeah, no, I see what you're saying. And I think my only question would be, when you start going back into the past, you know, and then the way, way back in the past, then you start running into a problem of what's the period of the data that you're,
right,
you know, that you're comparing to, because we only have, what, 150 years of data, right? And that's probably being generous. I'm not sure we even have 150 years, but
right.
How do you compare that little blip to like geologic timescales in the past?
Right, and that's when you get into ice cylinders and
yeah,
you know, all that stuff.
But you see what I'm saying? If the ice cylinders.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what that is. I'm flashing back to an episode of like Super Friends or whatever.
I think one thing that happens.
Wonder Twins.
Well, they take cores of pack ice in Greenland, you know, and they can go back 100,000 years or something. And
okay, so it's
not like the Grand Canyon, but with ice.
Yeah, the layers of ice, you know, vary based on ambient temperature, just like tree rings. And
I'm with you now.
Yeah.
All right. But Ken's been educated.
But my point is, if you go back and you find that the, you know, if it is a cycle, you know, in the absence of humans, there is this natural cycle. If the period of that cycle is, say, 1 million years, you know, it doesn't repeat itself for 1 million years, then can you really compare 150 years of data to that 1 million years? Because where do you compare it? Where, you know, what slice of that 1 million years do you use to compare?
Right.
Well, that's not a very compelling argument. I mean, if you really do see the graph jumping off the charts there, you can't say, well, you know, it's possible we're in one of these one in a million events.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that. If it's, you know, if our 150 years of data is just completely unique, it doesn't match anything that, you know, has happened in the last 50 million years, then...
Right.
Yeah, you're right, I see
that. How about if... Can I just agree that I think it's happening and it's man's fault and I don't care and we should just keep doing it then?
That's kind of
where
I'm
at. Can I reach that conclusion and make everybody happy?
Yeah, I'm there.
Okay,
I'm totally
good.
With you there.
There you go. If we destroy ourselves, then... There you go. Yeah. At least we're good at something. We're good at destroying stuff. We've found
exactly.
our calling.
Well, it's for the children, Kev.
It is for the children.
I completely agree.
This earth isn't going to destroy itself, you know.
It's going to take generations to destroy it.
We got to work at this. So let's unite.
It is, yeah, and like last episode, isn't it all about the conclusions? I mean, what conclusions are you going to draw? Let's just go ahead and say, you know, yeah, man's jacking the climate and we're putting emissions out there. What are we going to like... all gather in the New World Order and come to, you know, reduce our emissions on a world stage. I mean, it's just silliness.
Yeah. And then that same listener, him and I have had, or her and I, depending on, because we don't know who this listener is, but we've had extensive conversations on this. And they bring up a good point because we've used the same argument before about what science you choose to accept and not to accept.
Yeah.
And he considers this in the same thing. If you believe X because... scientists tell you and you haven't done the research, why do you not believe Y when some other group of, you know, learned people have gotten published and peer reviewed and said this is happening, but for some reason you choose not to believe in that?
Yeah.
That's I guess, you know, things like evolution, which I guess I'll turn in my right winger card, but I believe in evolution. I'm good with that. I'm convinced that that's real. And you know, why does climate science, does man-made global warming fit into that same mold? I'm not as convinced of that.
Right.
Maybe that makes me obtuse. I don't know. But I'm very comfortable in my obtuseness. So I'm open to be convinced, but I haven't seen it. And I'll admit I haven't looked for it real hard either. So
yeah, I haven't either, to be honest.
Because maybe I don't care, because I wouldn't do anything differently. I'm going to do the things I think are right. And if we destroy the planet doing that, then, man, sucks to be us. So.
Right. Right. And I don't feel like it's my job as American Joe to take one on the chin while everybody else is sticking their emissions up there. And
that's a problem,
you know,
right?
You know, like, yeah. And I'm like, if you're all doing it, I'm doing it too. And,
exactly.
You know, which is exactly what Shuang Shuang over in China's thinking right now. That's right.
Wow. You know, diversity moment.
Very fine. But that's exactly, I mean, it's not my job.
He's your pen pal, right?
He's my pen pal. Yeah, yeah. I knew him back in grade school.
Yeah, but it seems like every world global solution that pops up, somehow America bears the brunt of it. And I don't, you know.
Well,
I could go on my UN rant. I know you and I disagree about the UN, but it's like that's the same thing to me. It's like, why Kyoto? You look at what's Kyoto going to affect, and who's it not going to affect? There's a big difference there.
Right, right. So, well, we cause a lot of crap.
We do. I agree.
We're kind of like that big dude on the playground that just stirs up the
Oh, look at you. Excellent. We're tied.
You got me going.
Oh, excellent.
Well, I think Rob made a good point, though, that if this is real and, you know, this is the path we're headed down, I think we're screwed because there is no... I mean, you know, I'm picturing like the Galactic Senate in Star Wars, you know, that somehow that body has to come together and, you know, reach a consensus before we can do anything about it.
Yeah.
And I mean, we can't even do that here. And we've got, you know, 500 members of Congress that can't get along. So how's this whole planet going to be able to, you know, everybody grab the rope, let's pull in one direction.
Right, yeah.
I think if you want to save the Earth, what we need to do is we need to find a sentient race on another planet that we can go abuse and take advantage of.
Well,
because then we'll all unite, right, to F those people up. That's what we'll do. We'll be like, hey, we're all humans now, and let's go mess up the Venusians, because those people are exploitable. We can sell them tobacco and alcohol, and we'll make a bunch of money.
Paul Krugman, a few weeks back, was on some TV show where he made that comment that if, you know, if we just got attacked by aliens, that we'd finally be able to solve all these problems.
Right. It'd be everybody... like Independence Day without Randy Quaid. Be awesome. I think we could do it.
Okay, last listener comment.
Oh, my goodness. Bring it on.
Interesting note about the Google Santorum issue. Google is claiming their search results are protected by free speech. Other companies, this part's unrelated to Santorum issue, are claiming that Google is biasing their search results to favor particular companies via the order the search results are presented. Google is essentially saying, suck it, and claiming First Amendment protection. How's that for the free market, Jerry? Should we all stop using Google now, at least until they resolve this issue?
Gosh, I could answer this for you, I think. We've done enough of these shows. I think I could just do this, but I'll let you go.
No, go for it.
I think you're going to say Google can do what they want, and if you don't want to use Google, don't use Google.
Amen, brother. Preach on.
So, see, Google wants to skew the results, skew the results, and if...
I search think
engine
that's
X
exactly,
wants to unskew, then unskew.
I think that's exactly how the free market is supposed to work.
And if Rick Santorum didn't want websites talking about this substance that bears his name, then he shouldn't be a toolbox. So,
you know, Google's doing something you don't agree with, don't use Google.
There you go.
Absolutely.
I would say this is free market in action.
Mm-hmm.
And it's literally free because you don't pay for Google.
I don't personally find it objectionable, so no, it's not going to influence my decision. But
right.
You know,
yeah, that comment kind of—I wasn't sure what he was going for there exactly, because I don't think this violates any of your principles.
No.
So maybe there's a point there that we're missing. That's very possible.
Maybe.
Clarify for us. Points. Send it in.
Yeah.
Yes, I want to encourage all of our listeners to provide us feedback. Obviously, we love hearing from you, and we spend a lot of time talking about your comments. So
yeah, because we can
keep them coming,
rip them apart, and they're not here to defend themselves. It's awesome.
Go to facebook.com/MidwestPeace. You can like the page, and then leave your comments there. We love your feedback.
And I think we got lots more global warming stuff we could talk about, but we'll let some feedback roll in and.
Yeah.
Discuss it some more. I think that's a eminently discussable topic.
Oh, yeah. I also wanted to point out that occasionally listeners provide us links to stories or videos, and we read and watch them all, even if we don't specifically mention them on air. So keep them coming. Sometimes we include them in the show notes without talking about them, but we definitely we read and watch them all. So.
That's true.
Let's take a little break here, and when we come back, we'll get into the main event. Okay, we're back. Before we get into the main topic, I want to ask you guys a question. In episode 4, when we were talking about airliners getting hijacked, and I made a comment about how I thought everyone on the plane should be armed, you guys both laughed. Like that was the craziest thing you'd ever heard. And I just wanted to know, why do you think it is that you laughed at that?
I don't even know if we can answer that. I don't think it's the craziest thing I've ever heard. It's a pretty big departure from what we got now, right?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be like an old West saloon, but like in the air flying really fast?
I don't know. I wouldn't mandate that everyone be armed.
Well, no, and I did not mean to imply that. I just meant
I am a firm believer of... that people should have the right to bear arms. I'm all good with that. And I don't think you should like wear a holster with a giant Clint Eastwood piece on it so everybody knows you're armed, but I'm good with me being able to look at you and not know if you have a gun or not, because I think I'll behave differently if I'm a criminal and I don't know if you're armed or not.
But how can you say that if you – in what way does being on an airplane change it than if you're at the Home Depot? I mean, it seems like there's a little different environment. It's not? It's the same?
Well, other than if you shoot the airplane, there's like pressurization problems and stuff.
Right.
No, I think they did a Mythbusters episode on that.
It's not like the movies where you get...
That's what happens on Airplane, the movie.
Yeah, in the movies. But in real life, catastrophic depressurization or whatever isn't real.
Okay.
Oh.
I'd prefer not to find out empirically, but... I don't know.
I just want to know what it would be like to get sucked out and like, you know, I mean, you're going to know you're going, right? I mean, you'll probably pass out because you don't have oxygen. But, you know, you'll have 30,000 feet to just like, you know, take a little inventory.
You should do an experiment.
There you are. I mean, that's a long time. You'd be
be reflective for the next 5 minutes.
Right, right, right. You'll be really cold and pondering things.
I think you're going to be screaming like a little girl.
I think you'd scream for the first minute, and then you'd hit terminal velocity, and you'd be like, you know what, this is it. What am I going to do?
I think you would be an ice cube in the first 30 seconds.
I hope so.
You'd be an ice cube, and you couldn't breathe, and you'd pass out.
Or you'd get sucked through the engine and fod the engine.
Yeah.
That would be over a lot quicker.
I prefer
I don't know. I mean, when you say a statement like, I think everybody on the plane should be armed... That's a little more than I think everybody on an airplane should have the right to have a gun if they want to have a gun.
Yeah.
Rob's argument about it'd be just like the Wild West. I heard that when they were trying to pass the right to carry law in Missouri. And last I checked, that passed, right? Through some shenanigans, it passed. But I don't see people walking around like having gunfights in the middle of the street.
The reality is that you could carry a gun on a plane right up until the late 60s, early 70s, when the whole wave of hijackings, you know, changed things. And, you know, there had never been a problem up till then of, you know, some kind of...
But you just said a bunch of hijackings happened, right? Were those because people could carry guns on planes?
Well, yeah.
There you go. So... I'm confused.
Well, I'm saying it's not, you know, it wasn't a scene out of Gunsmoke or something where, you know.
Tumbleweeds ran down the center aisle.
Right.
Okay.
You took the last packet of peanuts. Draw.
So, okay, I'm. So back then, way back yonder, you could carry a gun on a plane, and then all these hijackings happened, and then they quit letting you carry guns on planes. Did hijackings go up or down?
Well, clearly we had one incident of a major hijack.
Oh yeah, I'm not saying they went to zero. I'm saying did they go up or down from that action of removing the ability to carry a gun on a plane?
I don't know the specifics. I would guess they went down. I don't think hijackings are as common as they were for a while there. I mean, it seemed like there was an
argument that. If everybody or had the ability to have a gun and I'm a hijacker and I whip out a piece, back then the policy on hijacking was a lot different than it is now too.
Right.
So now if I'm dude X flying home to see my family after a business trip and I'm packing a piece and
you're passenger 57.
Yeah, this dude hijacks the plane, I'm probably not gonna let them land him and, you know, wherever he wants to go and hand him some cash and a getaway car, you know, I'm probably going to – me and everybody else that's armed is going to try to take the dude out. So,
see, didn't they just have to ruin like a nice calm hijacking? Remember those old hijackings? They're like, take me to the Bahamas. All right. You know, fly down
some
there.
Unmarked bills and
right. And then they would like serve the passenger some cranberry juice on the way there. And then you'd land and then there would be drama.
Right.
That was good old days.
D.B. Cooper ruined it.
He did.
Is he still out there?
Of course he's still out there.
He's living large.
Yeah, I mean, I laughed because it's an absurd statement in the face of what we have right now. And it does paint an interesting, somewhat absurd picture, I think. But
it does raise the – I think absurd pictures raise questions of
yeah.
Well, exactly why are they absurd.
I mean, what if go away from the airplane? What if customers in a bank? I'm going to go in and I'm going to rob a bank, but there's 30 people in the lobby, and maybe one of them's armed, maybe none of them are armed, maybe all 30 of them are armed. I don't know. You know, I don't have to just go up to the guard and, you know,
right,
and hand him a donut and distract him because he weighs 400 pounds, and then go rob the bank and leave. I got to worry about all the customers too because they might be armed. I think it changes the equation.
Yeah, and I would just say, like, if I'm at the Home Depot with 100 do-it-yourselfers with a ruler and a pack and a piece, like that, I think that's a different environment than being on an airline cabin at 30,000 feet with 30 people packing a piece.
Right.
I think the environment changes it. I don't know. Not
but
sure
anytime
how.
You forbid,
yeah, I was going to say, how does that change it? I mean, obviously, no one's going to hijack the Home Depot and take it somewhere. But they could hold you hostage.
Together with you.
Right, right. You could have a hostage situation.
And then I don't see that it's any different at all. Other than, you know, there's always the danger of the plane falling out of the sky and killing innocents on the ground.
They're similar. They're dissimilar in the standpoint of safety and some other things, I think, that are there. But they're very similar in the fact that anytime you forbid someone from having the right or the ability to protect themselves, you give power to the person that doesn't obey the law.
Yeah.
Preach on.
So if I know that the government's going to go take guns away from everybody, and I know I can go, you know, down to the alley somewhere and buy a piece with the serial number sawed off, I have power and you don't.
Yeah.
I like that argument.
Man, maybe this won't be as contentious a topic to cover anyway. I thought our opinions on guns were a little more different, but
I don't think yours and mine are. I think Rob's got a different opinion.
How so?
I don't think you agree that guns. Everybody should have the freedom just to pack a piece, do you? You a fan of the Brady Bill? You like the Brady Bill? Do you like the waiting periods? Do you like all the stuff with the gun control that we've done?
I think a reasonable amount of whatever we think is reasonable, maybe that's the problem of gun control.
Yeah, define that
is a good thing. Right. Like okay, so if you have a history of mental issues and a criminal record, or you're a felon, I don't think you can legally own a piece or now, right? Is that the case?
Yeah,
like felons can't apply for a license for a weapon.
Correct.
That seems somewhat reasonable to me.
And they've shown no propensity to disobey the law in the past, so that
no, right, right. Felons, once they're felons, they don't commit other crimes.
Once they've paid their debt to society and been reformed by our prison system, they
right. It's kind of a one and done situation.
Yeah, they're contributing members of society.
Mm-hmm. That's how I understand it.
Yes. All right. Wait a minute now.
So
I can't let that slide. Now I'm in total agreement with you as far as mentally incompetent people. They should not be allowed to own and operate.
How do you judge mental incompetence?
Well, I don't know. I guess I would say it's incumbent upon their family or parents or whatever to
ratemymentalhealth.com with user feedback. I know, Jerry. I've worked.
It might be. It might be. But as far as felons go, I first of all, most felons are guilty of victimless crimes. You know, if it comes to anything related to the drug war, all those people are felons, but they haven't done anything wrong. So I don't see any reason to prevent them from defending themselves. Man. Yeah, I know there was a lot in there. We'll have to.
That was good.
That's episode 12.
We'll dig into that later.
Good topic for the future, though.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to have to shelve this, cover it later.
But essentially, I feel like some amount of gun control is a good thing, which in today's NRA climate makes me radically left.
Right.
I think we could talk about what is a reasonable amount, but I think if you want to be packing heat at the Home Depot, I say go do it.
Is the Second Amendment intended for militias only, or is it intended for the private citizen to bear arms?
That's it. It's definitely an individual right.
Well, there's an argument there, though, right?
That right, the, there
that
is.
The gun control community that the left uses.
Not according to the Supreme Court.
Well, I understand, right. But the Supreme Court's been wrong about stuff before, too, right?
Yeah.
Why did they have to put all those clauses in there? I mean, just say it.
And they wrote it in this really old language that's hard
right,
to understand.
Right, lots of, like, frilly Fs and Ps.
Yeah, right.
It's like 20 words long. What are you talking about?
But it's impossible
it's very
to
confusing.
Understand.
There, go out on the web, and I'm sure you already have, Jerry, because you're more learned on this than I am. But I mean, there's plenty of websites out there that parse that language and tell you why it means this or why it means that.
I know.
Not websites. There's whole constitutional scholars that have built careers on figuring out where that comma goes.
Right. And what this means that says this there, and that was in this language, you know, back right. then, and the, you know, to me, the Second Amendment is to allow private citizens to band together and do exactly what we did 250 years ago, you know, when we felt like we needed to. Not hey. Saying that that's advocated, not saying that that's something you should do, but a government, just like when you take away the ability for someone to defend themselves, they're powerless. If you take away the private citizen's ability to defend themselves against tyranny, the government has all the power. That's, you know, that's why we're here. That's how we got here, right?
Yeah.
So yep. we have to have that ability to do that again because you don't know what's going to happen. And I'm not saying that our government is that now, but it could be that 100 years from now or 200 years from now. You might believe it's that now already.
Yeah.
But that's not up to the government to determine that because that's a self-serving thing.
I'm much more sensitive to the self-protection argument than I am of, you know, band together and overthrow the government to water the tree of liberty.
So do you see no circumstance where that would be necessary ever?
Oh no,
that
I do.
Never
I do. I don't. I think that's a rare circumstance, and I think it's bandied about by radicals who suddenly don't like politician A because they're a big fan of politician B. It sucks to lose.
Man, in 1776, you know, I mean, there wouldn't have been a revolution, right?
Right.
And I'm sure there were people back then that didn't want that to happen. I'm sure it wasn't 100% of the people that lived in the colony right. wanted to revolt against England.
There's some loyalists in there.
So what do you do? Yeah, right.
Thomas Jefferson said, "The strongest reason for the people to retain the right to keep and bear arms is, as a last resort, to protect themselves against tyranny in government."
Yeah. But there's a lot of people that don't believe that's why the Second Amendment is there, and will make what they think is a very compelling argument for why it doesn't mean that, and that's an anachronistic clause that needs to be stricken.
And for me, I would say it's more, I wouldn't say, you know, tyranny of the federal government and their tax policies. I don't go Red Ridge on that thing. But I would say the idea of if you're counting like Jerry's thing, if you're counting on the cops to show up there and save you, you might be counting on the wrong thing. And the cops are the government.
I think that's part of it. I would agree with that. But I also think the government needs to have it in the back of their mind that if we screw up bad enough,
yeah,
you know,
you might get slapped.
All we need is some critical mass of people to say, all right, enough, we're done. They need to know that that's out there.
I think what makes me bristle about that is I think especially like after presidential elections, that feeling rises within, you know,
right.
that there is no way that this could have happened in my nation, that this is illegitimate, whatever right. it is.
That there's silliness out there to be had for sure.
And you think, boy, this is the time to water the tree.
Right.
You know,
it's overused.
And that happens on both sides. Right.
I agree.
Right.
That's certainly overused.
I think
that implicit threat needs to be out there.
I think it's probably common in generations, but it's a good thing that, you know, as we went through the Bush and now the Obama thing, that wherever you side on there, you had to deal with a tough loss at some point in there. You know, we don't have the dynasty anymore, and just what that feels like on, you know, November 7th, is that when we vote? November 6th. You know, waking up that morning knowing you just got.
Well, you probably vote multiple times because you're a
right.
Vote early, vote often.
That's right.
That's
I got
right.
great grandparents to vote for.
Yeah, I mean, just that feeling of waking up that next morning and knowing you lost and can't believe that you lost is a good little democratic feeling to have.
I don't know what it feels like.
You always lose.
You always lose.
No, I don't vote.
No, but you always lose because someone wins.
Well, yeah, that's true.
ready for the main event?
We are.
Sure.
Bring it on.
Let's get ready to ramble!
Okay, so there's this thing called the World's Smallest Political Quiz, and I've got a link to it in the show notes. And the three of us took it. And what this is it's 10 questions, so it's really fast. And when you take the quiz, it plots you on a grid that's kind of a diamond, with you got, you know, liberal on the left, conservative on the right, and then north and south you've got libertarian on the north end and statist on the south, and then in the center there's a square that's labeled centrist. So depending on how you answer these 10 questions, it'll plot you somewhere on this grid. And the three of us took this test, and I think we just have to apologize at this point for having defrauded our listeners these six episodes.
Right.
Because and you can see the cover art that I included with this episode has the graph on it. The kind of orange dot there at due north is me. The red dot is Ken, and the blue dot is Rob. And you can see that they are nowhere near left and right.
But I, yeah.
A nice line.
We all three of us are on that center line, more or less.
There's some butts there we can throw in, I think.
Yeah,
interesting.
But Rob's a centrist and Ken's a libertarian, and I think that's hilarious.
Yeah, but I think I would have guessed that.
Yeah,
that didn't shock me. So, and you look at the questions, and it doesn't take long to discern the pattern of what they're doing and how they put you in a quadrant.
Right.
And where I part ways with my conservative brethren is on these government as the moral big brother issues, and that's what skews me from. The economic issues, I think I'm right in line, but when you go into the personal issues, I part ways.
Yeah.
I mean, do we want to go through these question by question? We can do that.
We can. Okay, so it's divided into two sections. The first five are personal issues, and you answer agree, maybe, or disagree to each one of them. And the first question is, government should not censor speech, press, media, or internet.
Agree.
Maybe.
You are such a wanker. And that's the other thing I wanted to bring up. Rob is such a namby-pamby, non-committal person that the reason he's a centrist is he answered maybe to everything, which is not an opinion. Maybe shouldn't even be on there. I want you to pick a side, Rob. Throw a spine in a test tube, insert it in your body, and have an opinion.
Maybe.
If you answer eight or more maybes, it just throws you right on the left.
It just throws you somewhere. Maybe.
Come on.
What does that mean, maybe? You either censor something or you don't. How do you maybe that?
What are we talking, child porn, snuff films? I mean,
agree. They should censor it. Or disagree. You want them to censor. There's something for them to censor. Therefore, you disagree. You want there to
all
be
right, censorship. All right. I'm in. Disagree. I'm clicking it right now.
I like it. This is good. I'm going to berate you for the next 20 minutes and see what
I got nine more to go. I'm already
all beat. Right. Okay.
All right.
So we got two agrees and a disagree.
Military service should be voluntary. There should be no draft.
Disagree. You're going to agree, Jerry.
Yeah, I'll save you the trouble. I agreed to all 10 of them.
Right, obviously. And you.
But, you know, the problem is I shouldn't even show up on the graph because all these questions where it says government should, my response would be there should be no government. Right. So I can't answer that.
Yours should be the world's smallest political quiz.
Right.
Squared, where it's just one question, should there be a government or not?
Yeah, just should government? No.
Yeah, and there's just a radio button that either shows up circled or uncircled based on how you answer that one question. 0 degree of freedom graph. Be very boring. I think that if you have a government and you have a sovereign nation that needs to defend itself, I think there has to be some provision for a draft in the event that your sovereignty or your ability to exist as a country is threatened.
And I think there should be a draft. I don't think we need one now. I wish we were quicker on the trigger to pull one out.
Well, we would be if we would actually declare war when we fight wars, but we've gotten rid of that, you know, horribly inconvenient thing we need to do. So we're definitely riding some slushy middle ground there.
Right.
But you can guarantee going to fight in Libya, adding, you know, the 403rd war to the wars that we're fighting would be a lot less popular if they were going to start drawing numbers.
Or even the Iraq thing, you know.
Politicians, well, yeah, sure, even the first war. Anything more than zero, if your political life is on the line, then, hey, I'm going to be pulling numbers out of a jar and sending people over to die, that's probably not going to be real popular.
Right. But when it's not us, or you don't feel like you have to sign up, hey, that's what they signed up for. I don't want to complain.
Exactly right.
I have actually heard such a thing. You know, they signed up for it. They knew what they were getting into.
That's right. Well, good to the military if you don't use it, right?
Right, right. And then you say, I don't know. Tell us.
Madeleine Albright, or Madeleine Halfbright, as I like to call her. It was a Democrat that said that, which I found very interesting. Well, good to this military if you don't use it. So, anyway, all right. So we will. So we've got two disagrees and an agree.
Well, I would just point out that we don't have a draft now, and we have plenty of volunteers.
Yeah.
And
that would be fine, but I could see a point where maybe you wouldn't have enough volunteers, and you would need to have a provision for a draft.
Well,
World War II, we needed a draft, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Would we have won World War II without a draft?
I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that.
So. Could we have afforded to provide, you know, all the benefits that are given right now to people who voluntarily go in?
Yeah.
You know, we didn't start the GI Bill until towards the end of World War II.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's obviously a major benefit for people who go in. I mean,
if you buy in that we should have a central government, I think you have to buy in that there's got to be some provision to protect the country that government rules over. Now, your contention is I don't even want a government, so of course there's no
draft. But I would say that even within the context of the government, if your military was truly serving the purpose of defense only,
mm-hmm.
then you'd need far fewer bodies. You know, it's only when you're trying to project that force elsewhere around the globe that you need, you know, an order of magnitude higher number of soldiers and Marines.
Would you have, you're FDR, would you go fight in Europe in World War II, or do you just go kick Japan's butt and call it quits?
Well, I mean, I think they were allies. I think we were obligated to, right?
Okay. And Germany declared war on us, as did Italy, right?
Right.
Okay. So you do have some force projection there. What if you didn't have enough volunteers to fight those two wars at the same time? Do you do a draft? I mean, I'm not saying that's the first resort, but I'm saying that's got to be some resort. But I think Rob makes a compelling argument that if you had to do it that way, it would change the equation on these little police actions we go do.
Right.
Well, but I mean, you could make the opposite argument too, that you might be more reluctant to commit to some of these actions if you have a draft in place, then you know you always got bodies that you can throw at it.
Yeah.
Without the draft, you know, you get involved in an unpopular war and your recruiting numbers go south.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah, you've got this ready body there that you like she said, what good's this big military if you don't use it? Well, maybe you don't need the big military. Maybe you need a more moderate-sized military for defense.
And I'm not sure that the draft is 100% effective anyway. I mean, I don't know what the numbers are in Vietnam, but there had to have been thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of people dodging the draft that went to Canada or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Well, but again, just because it's not 100% effective doesn't mean it's not fulfilling some purpose. You just have to decide what that purpose is. So,
when it comes to the draft, I feel bad about the disconnect we have.
I'm shocked.
I feel bad. I'm guilty about the disconnect we have about rah-rahing these wars and let's go get them and we're gonna get those whatever you want to call them, you know. But it's not. the majority of the people, it's not their people that have to go do that.
Sure.
So right. it's like, you know, at the very least, don't even talk about a draft. What if W back in Iraq said, we need to go in there and it's going to cost $1.5 trillion and we need to pay for this cost. And so everybody's taxes are going to go up, you know, $100 a year. You know, you can pay $100 more. And that's what we're going to pay for this war for. Boy, you know, that'd be a lot different equation on.
So he could show you like a multimedia presentation on his iPad.
Exactly.
Right.
It's going to cost this much. And it would be like a simple like W type equation. This many people got to divide it, right? That's not a very good W.
No, but you know, but he's a uniter, not a divider.
That's right.
So
you're going to reach across the aisle.
So he would like divide by a fraction. So it'd be on the numerator side. He doesn't divide.
Can't get fooled.
Right. But the point I'm trying to make is that it was basically a cost-free war, or right. It was presented as a cost-free war to anybody who wasn't a military family.
Yeah.
So it's like, hey, you know, what do you want to do tonight? You want to hit Outback Steakhouse, start a war? You know, whatever. Yeah. It's all just little choices that we make. Yeah, sounds good. Let's start one.
And you can't win, right? If you don't go do something and then the news shows you something bad happening, then it's all, why aren't we there doing something? And then you go do something and you get crucified for doing something.
Yeah, so. I don't mind that. And I understand the tough decisions. Like when we went in there and they had these WMDs, I'm like, boy, you better be right. But the fact of the matter is, it didn't
mean really, to an end.
Yeah, right. So and that if you supported the idea of going in there, and it wasn't your kid that had to go in there, you're just like, yep. Hey, what does it matter to me? I don't have to pay more taxes. My prices aren't going to go up. And hey, maybe we get a bad guy. Sounds good to
but
me.
That's Check again box. More bad consumer thinking because of course you're paying for it, right?
Yes, we don't like to think about that.
No, but I mean, our deficit, our yearly deficit is not $1.5 trillion with a T because we're doing less stuff.
Right, right.
Just because they don't pass that cost on. They're passing it on to somebody. It's either future you or it's,
right,
you know,
right.
your kids or your grandkids or something. I mean, somebody's got to pay for that.
Yeah, I would like.
But if you don't see an immediate effect on your paycheck or on your taxes, it's very easy to detach yourself from that.
Right, right. Because you're like, hey, maybe we get a bad guy. What if we don't? No skin off my back.
Yeah, you'll get some good footage on CNN, some tracer fire, some green light, night vision goggles, and that's some cool stuff. So, yeah, I like it.
It was worth every Blitzer penny.
Reporting from the bunker.
We get
worth every penny.
Absolutely.
All right, next question.
Oh, my goodness.
There should be no laws regarding sex for consenting adults.
Agree.
I'll go ahead and fire an agree in there.
Not a maybe?
No.
You had maybe before, didn't you?
I probably did, but
I
don't know.
God.
All right, I'm throwing an agree. Come on,
what
you
kind of a liberal are you if you waffle on that? Oh, wait, sorry. I just answered my own question. Never mind. Okay. No, I mean, I think, and this is another place where I part ways is if people want to be gay, I think, they should be as gay as they want to be. Go get them. I don't care. I don't think the government should have any say in what marriage means or doesn't mean anyway, and then you don't have that discussion. So.
Yep. Amen.
Well done. We all agree.
All right. Wow, that's beautiful.
This is where we all come to the center of the little graphy poo.
Okay, next question. Repeal laws prohibiting adult possession and use of drugs.
And Jerry says agree, and I put agree, but I agree with, I'd have to really think about what that means. I agree with that in principle, but I would have to really see what that looks like.
Yeah, and I'm kind of between the agree and the maybe, depending on what drugs you're talking about, I guess.
Yeah, but where's that line? That's where alcohol is fine. Is pot more destructive than alcohol? I say no, but pot's illegal.
And I think it comes down to harm to others.
But doesn't it do more harm when you make it criminal and you make it artificially expensive? You're also doing harm to others by that.
Indeed. Let's just legalize that weed.
I'd be all for that. 100% for that. But then the question becomes, where's that chinning bar? Is meth okay?
No,
maybe that's a self-correcting problem. You know, people do meth and they off themselves and that eventually doesn't happen anymore. I don't know.
Okay, well, meth was created by the government.
Yeah.
Tell us.
Well, if the government hadn't gone and banned all the natural drugs, yep, like cocaine and heroin and so forth,
yeah, then you don't start doing.
There would never
drugs.
Have been a right. There would never yeah. have been a reason to go create all these designer drugs.
People still might have done it anyway.
Well, maybe, but I mean, it never would have. You know, from a business standpoint, it would never have been as profitable.
Right. I guess you're right in that right people have been smoking that ganja for generations and thousands right. of years, and the cocaine and the opium and the poppies. It's not like it's not something humankind just discovered, but now we somehow find a way to play chemistry set.
Yeah, so, I mean, alcohol is legal, but you don't have people just, you know, I don't go to work every day and half the people are hammered because they can't control themselves. Some people I know have that problem. Would it be significantly more if it was drugs versus alcohol? I don't know. I don't know where you draw that line. You know, if I say pot's okay, which I just did, is cocaine okay? Well, you're starting to get into some, but is my opinion on cocaine being worse than that tainted by the current climate we live in? You know, I don't know. It's hard for me to say.
The question that needs to be answered is whether or not you have the right to control what you put in your mouth.
Right.
And I believe that every human being has that fundamental right.
Yep.
So
you have the right to make bad decisions.
The rest of the discussion is irrelevant.
Although Rob's point is what someone will go to is, okay, the fact that I do that, does that have some negative impact on somebody else? And it
right.
might.
Right. And might. Can I say that it wasn't really – Cardinals just made the playoffs.
Did Cardinals Atlanta lose?
They just lost.
Atlanta lost.
In 13 innings.
Jeez.
Now it's time to smoke that crack pipe.
We should have done a bet because I'd have been wearing a tutu or something.
I'm going to have to go back and find that audio.
Yeah, you do, because we had this very discussion in our tech run.
I mean, yeah.
Bust it out and put it on next week's. I'll eat crow. I'm good with that. We'll make a bet on the first playoff series. How about that? And I'll do something incredibly humiliating if the Cardinals make it to the second round. How about that?
Haters going to hate.
Haters going to hate. But I stuck by it. You got to give me some credit.
I do give you credit.
I did not hop the bandwagon. I said it wasn't.
You did not check maybe on the radio button.
Correct. Like someone else I know.
Will the Cardinals make the playoffs? Maybe.
Maybe.
So here's it. Like, okay, people die from drunk driving, right?
Yes.
Drunk drive. People get drunk. They drive. They smash into people. They kill them. Why don't we make alcohol illegal again?
Oh, that's an excellent question.
That's a topic for.
How's that any different than what we think the ramifications would be to this rampant drug problem that we're somehow controlling with all this stuff we're doing?
Here's a better question. If it required amending the Constitution in order to ban alcohol, why haven't we had to amend the Constitution to ban all these other substances?
Ooh,
that Constitution is a dated, anachronistic document that needs to be updated and interpreted with the times.
Nicely put, Jerry.
I bet Obama, our constitutional scholar, could clue us in on why.
Oh, I'm sure he could.
Yeah.
And he's coming to St. Louis next week.
He is.
So I want to encourage all our listeners to donate some cash to us so that we could pay the $250 a plate dinner to go see him.
Please do. If we can get $700, even just $250, we'll send somebody. We'll send Rob. Although Rob would be so starstruck that he probably wouldn't be able to function.
Probably.
Might wet my pants.
Right. And then you'd go see Obama. Anyway, thank you. So, all right.
Tip your waitresses.
That's right.
Just the idea of
so the drug thing, I answer agree, but I kind of cringe at that. But I think I cringe at that somewhat just because of the current landscape that we live in. I don't know what that would look like if there was no laws against any of that. It would be very interesting to see.
I think
crime would go down, I think.
I would have to I'd have to find the citation, but the level of addiction in the 1930s when the first Narcotics Act was passed was something like, I want to say it was 3% of the population, or no, maybe it was only 1% of the population. And today it's the same. I mean, those numbers are comparable.
That's a lot of money.
So, I mean, you know, I don't think it's a function of the availability of drugs. I think addictive personalities are going to get addicted to things.
They're going to find a way.
Yeah.
And you're going to make them spend a lot more money or commit crimes in order to be able to afford or get what they're going to get no matter what. So,
yeah.
I agree with that. All right.
All right. Next question. There should be no national ID card.
Agree.
I'll say disagree.
Okay. Really?
Sure.
Well, you're going to have to defend that.
Yeah, because that's completely... Wow. Ooh. Go, yeah, bring it. I want to hear this.
Why did we get the controversy way at the end? Losing my edge over here.
You're losing your buzz.
My addictive buzz. I need another meth hit.
Fire up the crack pipe.
Need another hit of smack, Mr. Hand. Okay, I don't hear a defense yet. Yeah. He's thinking. He's Googling national ID card right now. What does that mean?
I guess I favor some kind of efficiency of what goes on with taxes and e-verify, and that just understanding who's who in the nation seems like an important thing. And maybe I'm too trusting of the government that I don't think they're going to use that to go swipe my coin.
I'd say you're pretty trusting. So who do you issue these national ID cards to, and who do you not issue them to, and what do you do to the people that don't have one?
Citizens only.
Which means?
Legal, what would you, now you got all the green card, work visa, all that stuff. Yeah. Legal permanent residence.
So what do you do to the illegal immigrant that doesn't have a national ID card?
You say, why the heck are you illegal? What are you doing here?
And then you do what?
Well, I don't know what you do then. That's a whole thing.
So why do you have a national ID card?
You give him a piece of candy, and you at least you know what's up.
Give him a driver's license and some welfare and tell him to reproduce. That's right. Uncontrollably.
Be fruitful and multiply. Yes, please.
And vote Democrat. Don't forget.
We have a weighted down system of debt here that we need to perpetuate. I don't know what you're going to do with this national ID card. Is this so they can scan the barcode at the back of your neck and collect your taxes at the end of the year? What is this for? I don't understand.
I mean, isn't the idea that you just know who's who? You would know who was the illegal, who wasn't. Isn't
and then
this
do
part
what?
Of the e-verify?
Are you going to kick the illegals out? Or just identify them as illegal, put a scarlet eye on their shirt?
I don't know what you do. I don't know what you do with them. I really don't.
Okay.
That's right.
I'm going. That seems like a lot of trouble to go to not do anything.
I don't know. What do we do now? Nothing.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
I'm good with that. I think if we just didn't hand people free crap, this problem would take care of itself. So.
I don't think that's the case. I think we just need to be more. Maybe the one reason I'll say I like it is we just need to be more honest about what's going on. You know, that we really do want illegal immigrants in our country.
Sure.
We actively recruit them to appear.
Right.
That that's not by accident or mistake. That it's, you know.
That's why we're all here. It's how we all got here, right?
What?
Immigration.
Oh, yeah. I'm saying.
What defines legal and illegal immigration? I mean, when did that concept come into vogue?
Well, there's a legal way to get in.
I know. But was there, when our families came over on whatever, you know?
I think the first.
The Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria, whatever ship you came over on, I don't know.
I think the first legislation in this area was, I want to say, mid 19th century following the Irish potato famine.
Okay. Trying to control the numbers a little bit.
Yeah, they were.
Out of hand.
Just, you know, this onslaught. So,
I mean, we're not the only country that controls immigration, right? I mean, that's not unique to America.
Right.
So, I mean, I think there's some validity to that concept, but I also think our immigration problem is skewed by the way our government operates and what we give to citizens. I think that problem would be self-correcting, and you would get the amount of immigration you could tolerate based on the jobs that you have and the people you have to provide for if we didn't hand out free crap.
Yeah, I don't think it's
so much the free crap in that, other than the fact that we want to have an illegal immigration problem. That we have an illegal immigration problem
because you don't think
have such a thing.
You don't think that costs us a lot of money?
No, I think I agree with Rob. Get in there, Jerry. Well, just the government is pretty much motionless on this problem.
Yeah,
right.
They don't want to fix it, and I don't think we can afford to fix it.
Yeah, but I think it would fix itself.
Yes,
we need. So you agree with both of us?
We need to have an episode just on the immigration thing.
We could. That'd be another good topic.
One reason that it's not being fixed is that
write these down.
Is that it?
We should record this.
Benefit the people who are in charge. Another reason is that the immigration is probably the issue I'm most fascinated with is because the way the parties break down on this, everything just crumbles. You got these little edifices up there on what Democrats believe in and what Republicans believe in, and then you throw this bomb in there, and nobody knows what they believe in, as discussed right here. It's the one issue that you can throw out to the parties. And the platforms are just get destroyed by this little grenade going in there.
Yeah. It's complicated for sure.
It is. And it's,
but right now I think people's decision to immigrate to this country is influenced by the benefit they gain from immigrating.
I'll agree with that.
Therefore, if you take care of that problem and say you can immigrate here, you're free to do that by all means. If you can come do something better than is already done here, or something different than is done here, or start a business, do whatever it is you do, yeah, come and get them. But if you're coming over here just to use our emergency rooms and go to California and grab a driver's license and maybe cut in on some welfare action, pump out 12 kids and collect a bunch of money, it's not a bunch, but it's more than zero. It should be zero. You shouldn't be encouraged to do that. So I think if that goes away, curtail the problem.
Yet again, one of the themes coming up here is that there are government incentives that make that happen. There are also free market incentives that make that happen.
Sure.
And so it's not just the government that's
incentivizing. And I'm good with the free market incentives. That's fine. I don't. What's wrong with the free market incentives? What do you speak?
Well, I'm saying if you want cheap labor and you work and you own a farm or you own land and you want your stuff done quick and cheap and you don't want to pay for health insurance or if somebody breaks their ankle on the job site, whatever that is, that's your free market incentive that's bringing that illegal immigrant in here.
Yep.
So I think we're not honest with ourselves as a nation. We say, oh, that's awful, and then we're like, hey, come over here.
But I want my cheap clothes and my cheap food. And
exactly.
Without regard to what that costs. Well, I'm all good with it. I mean, if, I won't use a diversity insensitive name like you did about our Chinese pen pal friend. But I mean, if he wants to come over and bring his 17 kids and go pick crops for some price that's below minimum wage, that's his gig. Go get him, Tiger. I don't think you should artificially inflate those salaries just because the market bears what it can. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Topic for another show.
It is.
Yeah.
It is. All right.
All right. Well, we've got five more questions to go here. I think we're going to have to postpone those till next week.
It's probably wise.
Yeah. So let's say big thanks to all our listeners, and we appreciate you listening, appreciate the feedback, keep it coming, and we will see you all next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.